Is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. It's not just Trump nominees who've been subjected to bogus threats this week.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries now says several congressional Democrats have been targeted by fake threats. He says they involved messages that were signed MAGA and included detailed threats of pipe bombs in mailboxes and swatting, or false claims of imminent danger that prompts a massive law enforcement response. These incidents targeting Democrats have followed similar threats against individuals up for key posts in the Trump administration.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. President-elect Trump hosted Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at Mar-a-Lago for a post-Thanksgiving dinner. It came in the wake of Trump threatening to impose sweeping tariffs, 25%, on Canadian and Mexican imports. In Bolt, West Virginia, a Raleigh County deputy shot and killed an individual who authorities say took a shot at the deputy, who was responding to a 911 call. The deputy is hospitalized. This is ABC News. We're hearing from some of the passengers on the New York City to Paris Delta flight on which a woman stowed away. No ticket, no boarding pass, yet she managed to get on the jetliner. Rob Jackson and others noticed her.
She must have been hiding in one of the lavatories when we departed from JFK. And then during the flight, she was seen moving from one lavatory to another, never actually going to a passenger seat.
Jackson, like many of us, when we hear these stories, wants to know how it happened.
I just feel like it never should have gotten to that point where an unauthorized person was able to board an international flight.
The woman arrested when they got to Paris. California's iconic Joshua trees are threatened by climate change, wildfires, and human encroachment. The state's Fish and Wildlife Department is out with a draft of a plan to protect them. Recommendations include avoiding or minimizing direct and indirect impacts from overgrazing, pesticide use, and unauthorized off-roading. I'm Richard Cantu, ABC News.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The U.S. Supreme Court is deciding whether to review a Wisconsin case over the issue of gender identity in schools. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The case Parents Protecting Our Children versus Eau Claire Area School District asked to strike down a school policy that the parents believe infringes upon their right to make major health-related decisions with their children. The district says its policy was created to provide direction and resources for transgender students and students with questions about their gender identity, including when they don't feel safe or accepted at home. Attorney Haley Archer with the ACLU of Wisconsin says the focus should remain on the children.
I believe one of the reasons that this question is debated is because it is complex. We're balancing the rights of parents, we're balancing the rights of schools, we're balancing the rights of students.
The parent group argues the school policy encourages kids to hide important aspects of their health, like changing pronouns at school. Lower courts have dismissed the case because none of the group's children are involved. Luke Berg with the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty represents Parents Protecting Our Children.
Children who have struggled with this and later come out of it have said, it was not actually helpful for me to have adults around me affirming that I was really the opposite sex. It actually confused me further. And so this can do harm to children. And in our view, that's why parents need to be involved.
The Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health reports nearly half of LGBTQ youth in the state seriously consider suicide. Nationwide, those rates drop significantly for transgender and non-binary youth who feel accepted at home, according to the Trevor Project. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight and cold with lows close to 10. Then a little more sunshine as we look here into your Saturday afternoon. Highs into the low 20s. And mostly sunny for Sunday. High temps warm up into the mid 20s.
Currently we're at 15.
Dom Selvia.
Just P.S., Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Listening to Matt Nair on Air. Jane and Greg are off today, digesting like the rest of us, I assume. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for them with my usual guest host, Angela Lang. Angela is the founder and executive director at BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. We're taking your phone calls. Number to call is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You can tell us what your most favorite dish was yesterday, or your least favorite, if you want to rat somebody out. Angela, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I am chill. I am calm. I ate good yesterday, and the Packers won.
Yeah, not a bad day.
Right?
Nice Thanksgiving dinner. Watch the Packers. What could be wrong with that?
Oh, and the Bears lost as well, too. So that's just like an extra little bonus for Thanksgiving.
Extra little Jordan slice Love. Of pie for that.
Oh, yeah. First, I mean, I didn't need an excuse for an extra slice mm-hmm. of pie, but that was a good reason for one. And Jordan Love got his Thanksgiving turkey, which he did not get last year because apparently everybody ate it before the players got it. So he got his this year, and it was in Lambeau, which is great.
Well, there you go. I got to say that I know I'm maybe in the minority here. I'm not sold on Jordan Love yet. His decision making still leaves me sometimes a little.
He's working on it. He's working worried. On it.
Yeah, I know they got him working on his decision making. So we'll see.
Better than Aaron Rodgers, though. That's the thing.
Oh God, I can't stand Aaron Rodgers. I take great pleasure out of his flunking year he's having there with
yes.
the Jets. So.
Agreed.
Yeah, what a prima donna. God, the guy must be the most impossible person to live with. And there's something wrong with his personality, too, because he hasn't talked to his parents for years. And it's just very, very egotistical.
I feel like people need to study his evolution a little bit. And those of us that loved him, like if you go back in my Twitter archives, I loved Aaron Rodgers and wanted to like marry him at some point. And now I'm like, OK, yeah, goodbye. Yep. See ya.
He's got a golden arm, but wow.
Yeah.
I would have hated being his teammate, too. Was a horrible leader, I think. You know,
he seems really insufferable.
Yeah, chewing people out in front of God and everybody. I mean, who wants to listen to that?
No, not at all. No. I mean, that's the thing is like Aaron Rodgers, I think he had his moment. And I don't know if he was flying a little too close to the sun, or what have you, but then he just started getting weird with some of his like values and his opinions on things like vaccines and COVID, just Yeah, somebody actually made a joke on social media and said, you know, for the timeline to be complete, now he needs to steal money from welfare recipients and whatnot. Because he's going
the
on
Brett Favre reference.
He's going on the same path as Brett Favre. Again, as somebody, you know, I'm a Wisconsinite through and through. Packer Sundays were, you know, religion for us. And you know, it was a betrayal when Brett Favre left, and then it felt very similar when Aaron Rodgers, and it does feel like he's following in his footsteps and his kind of fall from grace a little bit.
Yeah, and then to see Brett Favre, you know, go up to Lambeau to endorse Donald Trump.
Yeah, know, that was I mean, but was anybody surprised by that? You know what I mean? Like, when I saw that announcement, I was like, that's annoying and that sucks. And but, you know, for folks in Wisconsin, I understand why the Trump campaign went for that endorsement. But I don't think anyone was really surprised at this point by Brett Favre.
I doubt it changed anyone's mind. I loved watching Brett Favre, though, with my kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought he was one of the most exciting players to watch. He had great guts. He loved playing. I mean, he was like a little kid out there. That was what was one of the most fun things about watching him. So I was always a Brett Favre fan. I had a real good friend who's a tremendous athlete, hated Brett Favre for all the interceptions he would throw.
I mean,
bad decisions he'd made. But, you know, it was so much fun to watch.
It's like he made up for it, though. You know, he threw some interceptions and you didn't know when it was going to happen. And sometimes it didn't happen at the greatest times at the end of the game. But he was also known for, you know, kind of like that fourth quarter comeback as well, too. And taking those risks a little bit. And Reggie White, I remember watching him like as a kid and just like that was like peak Packers. You know what I mean? But if you're in Wisconsin, of course, you have to root for no one else. You can have a backup team if you'd like, but you're in Wisconsin. You need to root for the Packers.
Yeah, I grew up in the Chicago area in the suburbs and then moved here more than 40 years ago. And my brothers and sisters instantly said, "You're not going to become a Packer fan, are you?" Lo and behold. And I raised some Packer kids, too.
Yeah.
There's only so much dairy air you can breathe until it just infuses you and you become a Packer fan. Cheesehead just pops right on.
It's like they sprinkle something in the cheese in Wisconsin to make us all Packers fans. Like that's the thing, right? I actually just saw somebody on TikTok actually brag. They were like teaching, I don't know, it seemed like a kindergarten class. I don't know what the assignment was, but she like had, you know, this projector behind her and she was talking about the Packers and she was giving some kind of just like fun facts and history. And she was talking about how like their player and not player, but just, you know, like community owned basically. And it's not, you know, a centralized owner and you can be an owner and any fan can buy tickets and whatnot, and how that's like such like a thing. For a while, I just thought as growing up that that's what all teams did. And people are like, no, the Packers are special. And I was like, oh, okay. That makes us even cooler now, in my opinion.
Yeah. We got that little Packer certificate of ownership.
Yeah.
Going along the road. So
I want to do that. I want to get that. I feel like that's like a bucket list thing that like I need to do. I've been thinking about it for a couple years now.
And for people who haven't been to Lambeau, going to Lambeau is a great thing. It's just a tremendously fun experience to watch a game up there.
I haven't been to a Packer game. I've been to a Bucks game. I've been to all sorts of other games, but I haven't been to a Packer game. I've been to Lambeau because I've been to Green Bay. And of course, you kind of have to go by it and kind of like walk around a little bit. But I haven't been there for a game. And I'm like, one of these years, I need to do it. I just have to find the right time because I hate the cold. So like right now would not be great. It's got to be, you know, one of the earlier games too. Ideally against the Bears so I can watch them win again.
It's going to be cold today at Camp Randall here in Madison for the Badger game against Minnesota. Right. It's just really cold out there. Sometimes fun to play football in the cold, but I'm watching people right out to the window here on State Street carrying blankets on their way to Camp Randall. So it's going to be a cold one.
I think that's also why we drink so much, too, to stay warm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Badger games and Packer games are big drinking parties, not only in the parking lot, but in the game.
Yeah. I saw people shirtless and, you know, body paint and everything, even yesterday at Lambeau. And I'm like, how much whiskey did you drink?
Oh, Wisconsinites are built different.
Seriously. I love that for us, though.
It's a crazy drinking culture, though, when you get down to it, though, which is disturbing on the at the level of people's health. And, you know, people ruin their lives with alcohol. I've seen it happen. And it's, you know,
you got to be careful.
Yeah. This isn't a Wisconsin thing, but, you know, you can be an alcoholic in any state, and there are alcoholics all over the place in every state. But I worked with someone who had a tremendous alcohol problem, and it was just an impossible situation.
It's hard. And Wisconsin just enables that so much, I think, unfortunately.
Enables it, celebrates it, you know.
Yeah.
It's a point of pride. And, you know, the penalty for your first drunk driving offense is just a slap on the wrist. And, you know, in some states like Colorado, I think they put you away for you know, 6 months or something on your first DUI. But here you can have, oh, you can have a bundle of them before you get into serious trouble.
It does feel like a rite of passage for a lot of folks. You know, even these days, if you see like a politician or like so-and-so was, you know, they got a DUI 30 years ago, or they try to, I think, do that with Tim Walz. I feel like a lot of Wisconsin folks are like, okay. And, you know, it is kind of a rite of passage. And so like, while we joke around, I think folks do have to like, be careful. Like there are times, especially in politics, or if you're an organizer, oh, meet me here for happy hour for this meeting, or go to this event and there's alcohol. And then you realize you're drinking like a lot. So you kind of really have to be careful, I think. And there are times, especially after the election, I was drinking a lot of tequila. But now I'm like, no, we're going to chill. We're going to like kind of take a little bit of a fast from alcohol outside of hanging out with my friend later. But I think especially in Wisconsin, we don't really talk about like healthy ways to actually, if we're going to have this drinking culture, which is like fine, but what are the healthy ways to actually do it? And I don't think we talk about that enough.
Yeah. And I just hate seeing people throw their lives away. You know, with, you know, getting a bad accident or just kind of go down the tubes. And I've seen it happen too many times. So I wonder about the culture and the celebration of drinking in the culture. You know, I don't think my wife's ever seen me drunk. You know, I'll have, you know, I'm this Wisconsin. I will have a brandy old fashioned max two if we're going out for dinner.
I slugged
that first one down and then maybe have another one if we're going to be there a while. But I don't like get blasted. People are always bragging about getting blasted. I got blasted last night and stuff. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. It's a point of pride, but should it be?
Right.
You can weigh in on this if you're listening, if you're a drinker or if you're not a drinker and you know someone who is. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Yeah, I know. You know, it's celebrated on campus. Campus is across the state. But one of my sons worked in the restaurant business down here in Madison for many years. He said worse than the college kids were the alumni after Badger games who would go to the bars and just be ripped and rude and out of control. And so, you know, people who are working and anyone who's working today, I hope you don't have to run into it after the Badger game. But and those of you who aren't working, just enjoy the day off. That's the nice thing about Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
People get to relax and take it off.
I remember Mifflin as well, back in the college days and the Mifflin parties, which I don't know if it still happens. I think a couple years ago, someone got stabbed, I think.
Yeah, I think they have it. It's sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off, but I think it's on again.
And I only went once because I went to UW-Milwaukee. So, you know, we'd go to Madison on the weekends to, you know, party, but like not actually go there because I could not. No offense to UW-Madison. I just, I'm not built for it. But I remember we went for Mifflin and we had like a really long term paper due on one day. And we had, me and my friend had to ask for an extension. And I don't think we did well on that. But I remember walking around with like a handle of whiskey and I was like 21. And like that should not really be a thing. Like I understand celebrating and cause for celebrations, but Wisconsin, we there's a reason we have to stop selling alcohol at 9 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, we can have fun drinking a beer or two or having a brandy old-fashioned or two or tequila, but the excessive drinking and the celebration of it, I think that should end. Anyway, I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Jane, Matt, and Aaron, Greg, and I'm with Angela Lang, founder and executive director of Block, and we'll be right back, and you can give us a call, 855-752-4842.
Eagle 1490 AM.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, good morning. Listening to Matt and Air on Air. Jane and Greg are off, enjoying the long Thanksgiving weekend. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for them. And I'm joined by my usual guest co-host, Angela Lang, the founder and executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, I saw on Facebook yesterday that you posted, or the day before, about your 7th anniversary there and how exciting it was for you to see the idea of this organization start in your head and then blossom into this organization that's going strong 7 years later, when a lot of marriages collapse. and there you are. Tell me about the initial idea you had for BLOC and how things are going right now.
Yeah. It's wild to think about it. It's 7 years. So it was 7 years on Wednesday where we met as a first-time staff. And then actually 7 years today.
Wow, congratulations.
Is when we actually started knocking doors. So 7 years to today is when we started knocking. And, you know, I remember being very frustrated after 2016. I think people have heard me talk about the origin story and that, you know, on one hand, it was the election, but it was like actually the narratives and how people were responding and blaming our community. And it was just a wild idea of what does it look like to build a Black organization that's unapologetic, that doesn't do the transactional organizing, doesn't just pop up a couple weeks or a couple months before an election and has folks from the community. We've seen a lot of great folks, and I, you know, this is not a knock to any volunteer or, you know, there's folks from Chicago and California that want to knock doors in Wisconsin all the time. And, you know, we're grateful as a state to have them. But it hits different when you live in the same community that you're knocking, that you can relate, you can have these conversations. And so we wanted to make it two things that we had on our butcher paper when we were sketching it out is Milwaukee AF and Black AF. You can go on Google and figure out what that means if you don't know. but those were two big things that we wanted to do. And I was lucky to be able to leverage some networks and some resources and kind of build this organization and just really lay the foundation, right? People are like, you're the founder. I'm one of, right? Our deputy director, Keisha, she started out as an organizer, had probably dang near every job in the organization and is now deputy director. And the organization wouldn't be what it is without her. It's like, I had a vision and she trusted that vision. I laid, you know, maybe like a framework and she came in and decorated, insulated the house, you know, made it actually livable. And so it's wild to think in 7 years. And it was also a little bittersweet, not gonna lie, because it's like, it's been 7 years. And although we've done tremendous work, it does feel like the world is on fire right now. And so what does it look like? You know, when I share that thought with other folks, people are like, well, it would be more on fire if BLOC wasn't here. So it's weird to think about. And so it was a mix of emotions on Wednesday. Definitely lots of feels and lots of kind of tears of celebration and joy, but also curious and I think a little worried and concerned for the future and how we have to continue to show up and how our work is more important now than ever.
Yeah, it's got to be more than a little bittersweet because the organization came into existence after Trump won, and here Trump just won again.
And here we are.
Yeah, so that's crazy. You also have an interesting model, and I think a very important model for a lot of nonprofits, actually for some for-profit groups too, you know, getting away from the five-day work week. Talk about that.
Yeah. So we are off on Fridays. It started in 2020. And the full story is, you know, if we remember, it feels like such a long time ago, but remember the protests and the uprisings and basically what I would call like an extension of the civil rights movement with the protests after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others. And I remember this was when Donald Trump was on Twitter, and I had notifications turned on for him every time he tweeted, because, you know, I have to be in the know of things in case I talk to press, and which was like not a way to do that. but I did. And I remember waking up at about 3 a.m. and seeing the infamous tweet, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Oof. And I remember feeling like, oh, this feels different. This feels like an actual threat, and there's a target on our back. And I waited a few hours, and it was about 7 a.m. when I texted the staff chat, and I said, hey, y'all, I'm really struggling. Mental health day, ? And I believe it happened to be a Friday, or at least close to it. And they were like, yeah. And they responded immediately, which let me know they also had a hard time sleeping because they're responding to my text at 7 a.m. Right. And I believe, you know, after that, there was another reason that like a week or so later we had that Monday off, and we started to think that, wow, these three-day weekends like feel really good, especially when a lot of community events happen on Saturday. A lot of folks are always cleaning and doing errands on Sunday. Having that extra day felt important, and so we continued it, and I think a lot of folks started it in 2020 and slowly started to come back. People have asked, how come we haven't come back and returned to a five-day work week, even when working from home and things like that have changed? I said, do you want to tell my staff that we are moving back to 5-day work weeks when everything is still, we're still hitting our numbers, we're still hitting our goals, we're still doing what needs to be done. And if we're really going to be in the long-term fight for this, we needed to take that extra day. And we hold that as much as possible. Obviously, we have some exceptions when there's an election and whatnot in GOTV, but it's important for us to kind of maintain that boundary where we can.
And it's an important boundary. And I think a lot of organizations would benefit from the 4-day work week. Some European social democratic countries have a 4-day work week. Efficiency doesn't go down. I mean, there's this ridiculous, and maybe it's puritanical tradition in the United States, you know, where you just got to work. You know, people would, when I was living in D.C., were bragging about working 60, 80 hours a week. And what's your efficiency on that? Those last 20 hours has got to be really low.
Exactly.
So I think this model that Angela Lang here from Black Leaders Organizing for Communities of a humane 4-day work week is something that we should take up in our nonprofit organizations and even those businesses who want to have a long-term staff and high efficiency should think about doing as well. You're listening to Matinee Air on Air. I'm Matt Rothschild. We'll be right back. We're going to have Representative Christian Phelps, one of the success stories of the election, joining us soon.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. It's not just Trump nominees who've been subjected to bogus threats this week.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries now says several congressional Democrats have been targeted by fake threats. He says they involved messages that were signed MAGA and included detailed threats of pipe bombs in mailboxes and swatting, or false claims of imminent danger that prompts a massive law enforcement response. These incidents targeting Democrats have followed similar threats against individuals up for key posts in the Trump administration.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. President-elect Trump hosted Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at Mar-a-Lago for a post-Thanksgiving dinner. It came in the wake of Trump threatening to impose sweeping tariffs, 25%, on Canadian and Mexican imports. In Bolt, West Virginia, a Raleigh County deputy shot and killed an individual who authorities say took a shot at the deputy, who was responding to a 911 call. The deputy is hospitalized. This is ABC News.
your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks host the Washington Wizards at Fiserv Forum. Head coach Doc Rivers asked how Chris Middleton is doing after surgery on both ankles this summer.
It went great. Yeah, he's progressing. Let me keep saying it, but you can ask as many questions you want. It's not going to make him come back faster.
So. NFL, the Packers start practice tomorrow preparing for Thursday night's game in Detroit against the Lions. College football, the Badgers losing at home to Minnesota, 24-7. Head coach Luke Fickell on finishing the season with a losing record of 5-7.
We got a lot of work to do, and there's only one way. Understand this. Everybody can say recruiting. Everybody can say go transfer portal, all those things that we'll do, but there's one way to get better at this freaking game, and it's to freaking work at it, and it's to play it, and it's to go out there and perform. You don't just get better practice. You don't just get better watching film. And if we don't go out and perform and play, then our ass ain't going to get any better.
That's Wisconsin's head football coach, Luke Fickell, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight and cold with lows close to 10. And a little more sunshine as we look here into your Saturday afternoon. Highs into the low 20s. And mostly sunny for Sunday. High temps warm up into the mid 20s.
Currently we're at 15.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time, an all-new live show back in the studio. Join us for a look back at the holiday weekend and prepare you for the week ahead.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. Jane and Greg are off today. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for them with my usual guest co-host, Angela Lang, the amazing founder and executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. And now we've got a success story to talk about amidst all the bad news that was on November 5th. There was some good news here in Wisconsin with Democrats gaining ground in the state legislature. One of the newly elected state representatives is Christian Phelps, who's joining us now. Christian, good to see you this morning. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, you too. Good to see both of you. I miss seeing you
both of you more often.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, we knew Christian in his former incarnation as a communications guy over at the Wisconsin Network for Public Education. You're now representing the 93rd Assembly District down here in Madison. The 93rd is in the Eau Claire area. You ran a close primary and then a close general election. Tell us how you got across the finish line, Christian.
Just by like working so much harder than I even had like mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically prepared for. I've been claiming a certain amount of right to complain more than other people, like even at sort of like new member gatherings or like leadership elections. And I say, like, I don't see anybody else in this conversation who had a competitive primary and a competitive general election. Mm. So I get more nap time. I'm allowed to be late to this meeting. Like, yes. Here are the things that I need for the next few weeks, because it really was a lot of work, but it was, our instincts as a campaign in the community were incredible. And honestly, the amount of like emotional turmoil and weirdness on election day was kind of cushioned by the fact that I actually did see so much action and like proactive sort of community organizing instinct take hold in the new 93rd all year.
Now, you said your instincts were right and you did a lot of hard work. Do you want to mention what that instinct was and the kind of hard work you did?
The instinct is a campaign is, I mean, Angela, first of all, congrats on 7 years of Block. What an organizing model. I mean, I know Block is very like centrally located in Milwaukee, but its organizing impact reaches statewide, as you know, and you're not alone. Like, it's not the only organization that does this kind of work, but the instinct was make a campaign that's an extension of like general community building that I'm already part of and that other people I know and learn from are part of, and just like keep learning from them and keep doing that kind of thing. So a campaign that feels national or even statewide for a state assembly race really doesn't make any sense. And a campaign that's really transactional, elections are inherently kind of transactional when you're going around and you are asking for something, you're asking for a vote. And I think voting is part of the change that we need in our communities, but it's not the entire part. And my whole reason for doing this was because I've been in the community organizing world for a long time in the nonpartisan, you know, sort of outsider space, and didn't plan on running for office at any point. But when I saw that we had a new district, and I know so well that one crucial piece of the advocacy puzzle we've been missing in Wisconsin is some allies in the Capitol that work with the movement builders outside the Capitol on the stuff our actual local communities care about and need. That's why I did it. So that I just stayed rooted in like the message we're going to put forward is the one that's rooted in the needs of our actual literal community right here in the Chippewa Valley. And the way that we're going to get it out there is just by talking face to face with as many people in that community as we possibly can, and not shying away from your actual values. Like, I'm a big opponent of watering down your message. I think people can see right through inauthenticity. And if you're not like presenting yourself as the kind of candidate and person that you actually are, that's not the kind of person somebody wants to elect. So I said, here's what I believe. Here's why I believe it. I think you and I have a lot of shared values. And in a red wave year to get across the finish line in both of those competitive races, I think it proves that is the winning model.
I want to go back to the not watering down your values thing, because I think that is so critical in a state like Wisconsin. I feel like there is this general, we have to tiptoe around certain issues, you know, anywhere outside of, you know, southeastern Wisconsin. And then southeastern Wisconsin gets a completely different message, maybe a more progressive message. I remember talking to somebody who managed a campaign who quite literally said, well, they need to do this to get elected and they could be progressive later. And so I want you to speak a little bit more about how you were able to be effective, and not to put words in your mouth, maybe any support that other candidates can think about of like not feeling you have to water down your message or run to the middle, and you could run as a progressive and win.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it was like a hypothesis that we were kind of testing in real time, because I've always felt that way. And there's a couple parts of it. Like, I think that I did see proof of what I've always suspected, which is that there's a lot of untapped progressive energy in the actual voting population in Western Wisconsin that just hasn't felt empowered to express that at the ballot box. Gerrymandering, like if you're a progressive in rural Western Wisconsin, you have not had any chance of electing somebody that even remotely represents your values for 14 years. So in a lot of cases, you're maybe not voting in the state legislative level, or you're certainly not expressing that, because why would you? There's no hope. So with the new maps, I was trying to sort of find and connect with as many of those people as I could and just give them permission to think, this time you could actually elect somebody that much, much more closely represents your values. And that person might actually have a little bit of power in the Capitol for the first time in that long. And secondly, it's just kind of what I was getting at with the authenticity thing. You know, it's like I was born and raised in Eau Claire. I have the values that I have because of my own lived experience. I think being an LGBTQ young person in public schools in Wisconsin shaped me for sure. Coming from a labor family, a public education family, and having that be one of my own personal and professional backgrounds in the era where that's all being dismantled and attacked, like, call it progressive or not, but I think I found a lot of unity around ideas like healthcare is a human right, education is a human right, housing is a human right. I don't think it would be honest or responsible of me to go to people and pretend that I don't believe those things are human rights, yeah, and then start governing in a way where I'm trying to make them into human rights and they might not understand my approach. Like, I told a lot of people over the course of these 7 months that I literally cannot promise anybody that you will agree with every single thing I say or do in the Capitol. Right. But I can promise that I'm being upfront with you about why I think this is the best approach. I think you and I have agreed on what the issue is. And I will always explain why I did or said that after I've done it. And I think that you're going to see a lot of continuity because we're already here connecting face to face and agreeing or disagreeing where we do or don't. Like, I'm not going to try to make everybody happy up front, because that's impossible once you're elected. Like, we should just connect in a real, like, relationship building way. What are the issues we're both feeling and seeing in this community? And then what are the solutions that we propose? And by and large, I think the progressive solutions were the ones that were the most popular anyway. Like, I very much reject the idea that progressives only live in Milwaukee, Madison, and the East and West Coast. That's not true. It's not been my experience in 31 years of being a Western Wisconsinite.
Yeah.
You and Angela both have used the adjective transactional here and explained that you're doing work that isn't transactional when you go out and knock on the doors. I'm going to start with you, Christian. I also want to hear Angela on this.
Yeah.
What are you doing differently?
I view a successful and responsible electoral campaign as a continuation of ongoing work to build relationships in the community and sort of grow your network of not only like network of movement builders and action takers, but also your network of personal support. I mean, this month is a pretty heavy, like, this is a perfect example of the kind of month where you need a strong community, not just your own family or your own like inner circle, but a strong community of people that are like dedicated to these values through thick and thin, because we're in the thick right now. Like, and so I think I had a lot of people say to me when I would go up to them and campaign or ask for their vote, like I said, the asking for the vote part feels very transactional. And if you're popping up out of nowhere to do that, people kind of feel that. I had a lot of people say like, well, I know you, like you've been at all the boring meetings I've been at when I was on the, you know, special ed PTA and we were trying to get that thing. Like, we already have this sort of rapport because we're doing a logical continuation of relational movement building, community organizing.
And Angela, how would you explain the difference between, you know, transactional electioneering and the kind of deep canvassing that you guys do at Block?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Christian in the fact that it's it doesn't kind of just stop on election day, right? It's being able to build a sense of community. It's being able to listen, right? And like listen without an agenda, right? Christian, obviously you are running, but like, I feel like knowing what I know of you, you were just like listening just to listen. And if people, you know, supported you and bought into your vision, great. But no matter if they did or not, you're still valuing and understanding that person's issue, whether they support you or not, which I think is a big thing. And so being able to continue to build. And one thing that I feel like I don't see enough elected officials kind of take advantage of is kind of having this mutual relationship, right? What does it look like to organize your own constituents and to work with them? It's not like you're elected and then like now you're up here. So great, cool. You're going to go talk to the little people when you need them again. But like, if you need cover, so to speak, on a particular issue, it's helpful to go to the same activists and organizers and voters and residents that voted for you and say, hey, yeah, you want me to do this thing. I don't know if it's, you know, going to pass, but this is what I need you to do. It could be a mutually beneficial relationship in the way that elected officials should also be organizing their constituency. Because at the same time, yeah, you may have a platform as a elected official. You may be able to like do some stuff. That's great. But also, if we don't like what you're doing, we'll just vote you out. So we should actually work together to amplify each other's issues. And, you know, that's also a way to keep your own district happy, is that you're working on what they want you to. Even if there's like the votes more broadly or not, you have done the work to organize your own constituency, that you're able to kind of have this working relationship back and forth. And there's a shared kind of co-governance type of power there. And I think that is a big difference kind of in transactional organizing. People are just trying to show up and extract as many votes as possible, but don't really care about the actual person behind the vote. And that's when you see people get elected and then poof, they disappear and you don't see them again until they're trying to get reelected, unfortunately.
Christian, what are the issues you want to work on most or quickest once you get to Madison?
Well, I think it's worth being realistic about the fact that we worked really hard to actually flip control of the chamber and fell short of that. I mean, I personally knew that when Trump was on the ballot, there was no way to predict what was going to happen. I thought the range of possibilities was from really good for us to really bad for us and anywhere in between. I mean, so that wasn't a prediction. There was no way to be wrong about that, but like it wasn't that good. And I think my goals are twofold, like work on the issues that we all already talked about and ran on, and be really deliberate in prioritizing things that I think my Republican colleagues are going to feel the most pressure on, because let's remember that the fair maps don't go away. They still have to run in 2 years. And so if they're going to continue defending not expanding Badger care, like even specifically for postpartum care, and keeping the special ed funding rate at like less than a third of what it actually costs to administer. Like these are things that I've met voters throughout the district, throughout the political spectrum, that just don't agree with the status quo on those things. So I say push really hard on that stuff. In the 93rd, the top priority is releasing emergency funds for hospitals. We had the HHS closures. The hospital I was born in closed abruptly. We lost 1400 jobs. There's a huge healthcare desert. Probably the number one issue and top concern. So like, I'd say those three things policy-wise. And second, like, I hate to be a broken record here, but I just want to echo what Angela just said. Like, the other goal is model the type of democracy within and outside the Capitol that we've all wished we could see more of as community builders across Wisconsin. Like, I think whether we can get the policy stuff done, we can build the movement.
Christian Phelps, can you hang on and come back right after the break? We'll just have a real quick break. I'd love to get your take on Trump and what happened.
Of course.
All right. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm here with Angela Lang and Christian Phelps. We'll be right back.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane and Greg are off today enjoying the long weekend. They certainly have earned a long weekend after all the work they did leading up to the election and in these days afterward. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for them with my usual guest co-host, Angela Lang, the founder and executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, enjoying its 7th anniversary. And we are joined for the next 10 minutes or so by State Representative Christian Phelps. He agreed to stay on after the break here. He is the new representative of the 93rd Assembly District, which is in the Eau Claire area. He won the seat the old-fashioned way, just by working his tail off. So, Christian, I should call you Representative Phelps, excuse me.
You should not.
You earned the title. It's like with Representative Hong. I mean, I coached my daughter and her sister in soccer, so I always just want to call her Francesca. But, you know, she earned that title, so I call her Rep Hong. So you earned it, Rep Phelps. So let's start with Representative Phelps. What you won in the Eau Claire area. Trump won the whole shebang. It must have been a kind of schizophrenic evening for you with emotions. Wonder how you handled that. And also, I wonder what your take is on the riddle of how come Kamala Harris lost so badly.
It was a very strange evening. I mean, I was unwise enough to like spend some time looking at the New York Times map before I went to the gathering, the Eau Claire County election gathering. So I really didn't walk in like mentally prepared for people to look excited to see me and start congratulating me because it looked like my own results were good because I had already seen I thought it was pretty clear very early in the evening what was going to happen at the national level.
Right.
But my take is that there's only one thing I would be more upset about if Trump was going to win, and that's if I had not won. I mean, as strange as it's going to be to join a legislative body as a new Trump administration takes over, it would be even more demoralizing for me personally to feel like I fell short and I'm still on the outside and I can't do anything about this, even though, of course, not being able to do anything is never really true. You know, there was a goal here, which was to be able to help my community in a new way and as productive as a way as possible. And so, you know, the threats that have been promised at the federal level, I think just make that even more important. I also know that in the weeks since the election, we've had more time to look at the data, and the value of our hard work in my district is so abundantly clear. Almost every county in the country, obviously, that's an oversimplification, saw a pretty meaningful shift toward the Republicans from 2020. And Eau Claire did not. It saw none. It just held. And I think in a red wave year, that means we've made inroads as far as the long-term, you know, value of our organizing and our ability to pitch a progressive vision. I think, you know, I won the Eau Claire County portion of my district by double digits, I believe. And so that, like, the hard work and the canvassing and the conversations that we had really held off some even worse results. can't tell you how many messages I've gotten that are like, oh, thank God, something to cheer for. Thank you for giving us some good news that we woke up to. And my take on why the result was that way is that I think the hot takes are always a little bit off. There's no way to really know. But it was clear all along that I thought there was a lack of buy-in to the mainstream Democratic Party message for quite a while. You know, our generation has really only known the Walker Trump era, and Democrats repeatedly being unable or barely able to beat back that doesn't really inspire continued loyalty to that party. And so I think that was clear. And you know, I think there's all the usual sort of ugliness of the Trump message took hold again, in addition to the fact that I think there's something very I see something very clear about, like, their power is very enchanting. When he's projecting power, you can get closer to it, and maybe that gives you more power. I think there's a lot of room for us to pitch a different definition of power to the community, which is that like we have power in each other and in ourselves. And when we empower one another, neighbor to neighbor, that's actually a more sustainable, healthier, and more powerful form of power than his sort of authoritarian message. And when people feel like both parties have left them behind for a long time and they're frustrated about the economy here and obviously incensed about foreign policy in Gaza, if the only options are maintain the system or break it, sometimes people are going to choose to break it. I wish that we could have put forward a better vision of, you know, let's break the parts that need to be broken and move toward a better vision. I think that we should do that at the local and state level so that that can sort of trickle out through the communities and through the organizing Angela and I have been talking about. Those are my takes, but they're incomplete, obviously.
You know, we got about a minute left. Mike McCabe has been saying for quite a while that the Democratic Party has a brand problem, that it's just people can't identify, with the possible exception of the Affordable Care Act, a single thing the Democrats have done that have improved their lives. Mm-hmm. And part of it is messaging. I think Biden did a lot that was good messaging, but a lot of good that he could have messaged better. His programs were okay, but he didn't get it across. So there was a messaging issue there. Christian Phelps, the new representative of the 93rd Assembly District, thanks so much for being our guest today.
So excited for you.
Thanks for inviting me. So good to see both of you.
You too.
Such a good way to spend the morning after a holiday.
Bring good news from the election. That's a great thing. We'll be right back with Joel Rogers. You're just what I need.
You're listening to the Talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Dom Selvia.
Just PS, Dom's producer here. Next time, Dom will be back live for all the political talk you missed. No more looking at how the sausage gets made, except for the government. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Soaring high above lacrosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX Lacrosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. It's a post-Thanksgiving recall of cucumbers. Arizona-based SunFed recalling whole cucumbers. Possible salmonella contamination.
The cucumbers were sold from October 12th to November 26th and are being pulled off store shelves right now. They were sold from California to New York and many points in between. Salmonella can cause serious illness and even death in children, the elderly, and those with weakened immune systems.
ABC's Alex Stone. Thanksgiving Day homicide in Lauderdale Lakes, Florida. Investigators say Hurley on McLean was shot dead. His family says it happened during a dispute with a neighbor over loud music. Police say the shooter is claiming it was self-defense, but McLean's widow says he was unarmed. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau flew to Florida to have a post-Thanksgiving dinner with President-elect Trump at Mar-a-Lago, the sit-down coming after Trump threatened to impose sweeping tariffs on Canadian imports. This is ABC News. A retired NFLer suing over the death of his son.
In the lawsuit obtained by ABC News, former Green Bay Packers linebacker Brady Papinga is suing Providence Cedars Sinai Tarzana Medical Center here in LA and some of its doctors, claiming his 17-year-old son Julius did not receive proper care there last year. He claims the doctors negligently and wrongfully concluded his son was having a panic attack and did not pay attention to what was really unfolding. He was having chest pains and breathing issues. Julius died of a pulmonary embolism. The Papinga family is suing for wrongful death due to medical negligence. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.